I got a phone call and said, we have a cancellation for art up. And I said, okay. And then I went, oh my God, what have I done? Then I have to put this together. And I did an installation, which is, by the way, in the University of Portland show in a different configuration. But it's a big piece. It's made up of three components. But I love Facebook. I put a little call out and said, anyone want to help me make this? And I had these people in my backyard who we had a big workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And about 10 people came. And they cut out things and pasted things. They worked on a module.
Mm-hmm.
I had 84 of them. And it was just wonderful for them to work on it. And it was a way of getting the work done.
What was that piece called?
That piece was called, I can't remember what it was. It was called No Coal, No Coal, K-N-O-W-N-O, Coal.
Mm-hmm.
But since I did the piece, which it has maps on it of North Portland and Southeast Portland and our general area, those were the two routes that were eliminated because the people withdrew from the proposals. So I said, okay, I want to use this piece, but I want to make it more up to date. And so I now call it Three Down, Three to Go. And so along the route, I interspersed text that said things like, three down, three to go, pulled out, not enough money, lost investors, all the things that made these things mm-hmm. pull out. So it gave it it was updated.
So the rally you were involved with your husband was
anti-coal.
Coal transport projects.
Yes.
And then the idea of making art of it came about by accident because there was a spot
was invited.
To fill.
It was in my mind, but I hadn't gotten to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been photographing now for 2 years. And my original idea, even when the University of Portland invited me, was that I was going to use these photographs on sculpture. And that didn't happen, as you know, because you've seen the work and how work changes as you delve into an idea. So my original idea, I have thousands of photographs.
Of what?
Of train routes, train tracks, all the schools that are next to the trains, farmland that's next to the trains, all the way from Eastern Oregon to Astoria.
Mm-hmm. So your initial kind of artistic impulse was to look at the dust blowing off the trains? Was that the initial problem?
Well,
leaving aside all the other issues like
right. No, that's it's a very big problem. I couldn't photograph it because there are no coal trains now coming through Oregon. And I had planned this summer to sit at the Vancouver train station where there are also freight trains that are adjacent to the, and wait for a coal train. But there's only two or three a day.
Mm-hmm.
And as the summer wore on, I got less and less interested in following that path.
Mm-hmm. What, because you would have to sit there all day?
And I might have sat there all day, and they came from, and I could have sat there all day, and there was nothing, you
mm-hmm.
know. And I had already started crocheting a piece where I took fishing line, and I purposely used fishing line for two reasons. This is a piece called Particulate Matter, because fishing line is transparent. It can be other things. It's transparent. And I threaded, first of all, I looked for all my black beads, and I threaded black beads, and then I bought more black beads and more black beads. And I threaded it onto the fishing line and then crocheted this gigando piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I became more interested in a more tangible way, a less tangible way than photographs. A less literal way, a more abstract way mm-hmm. of dealing with these issues.
Right. So that piece with the fishing, where the line is kind of woven.
It's crocheted.
Crocheted within a big frame, like the size
of a
door.
That's right.
And then there are black bits on it, which are beads, and then down the bottom, black mussel shells.
Yes. And when I first started doing this piece, it was going to go. I just was in love with what it looked like. And I did it in sections and then put it together, and that's how it gets this three-dimensional shape. And then I thought, well, do I hang it on the wall so it's limp, which is really kind of nice because it's airy and limp things. But I found this frame in my studio, which is from a computer before small computers. It's from a mainframe. It's something from a mainframe computer. And what attracted me to it is in the backside. It has holes, so it was very easy to stretch something and attach it to the holes. And I like the concrete. It was like more like a slice of the air, like a scientist would put air on a slide.
Yeah.
Rather than the ethereal loveliness of air blowing. So there's all those funny things you think a million hours, although you do watch lots of movies. Or listen to a lot of movies, I should say. You look up once in a while.
The signature piece of the show is called Not in Any Backyard. The show's called Not in Any Backyard. And it's a house on a little green yard with a picket fence. And just tell me how that came about.
Well, that's an interesting story, because when I first started doing this, and I was outraged that these trains were going to come three blocks from my backyard in my organic garden, some people would say, well, you know, that's awfully selfish of you. After all, the people in China need electricity too. And I'd roll my eyes in my head. And I would retort with, well, the people in China also like to breathe. And that would shut them up. And then I was having these lots of conversations. I'm a rather chatty person. Someone said, you know, well, I'm going to step back a minute. Other people would say, well, you have to really just think of the global issue. And I could not separate the two. I mean, for me, global is local, local is global, because this particular issue has implications. The fact that it's in my backyard means it's in a whole lot of other people's backyards, from beginning to end, from the mining to the actual production of electricity. And then after the fact, Oregon and Washington get all the blowback in the air that comes on the air currents. And they can actually measure that. They have, on Mount Bachelor, they have machines. They have calibrators that can actually, they know what kind of coal was burned, and they know the chemical composition. So we know that that happens.
Are they measuring like dust or soot?
They're measuring carbon. Carbon.
So
carbon
and
particulate matter. And particulate matter is a really important word. We'll go back to that. It's kind of all related. It flies about, and it has sizes, and 350 has become an important size for carbon. At 350, we can maintain the world as we know it.
But 350 what?
Parts per million. That's what PM means, parts per million. And we're above that now. And in that piece, particulate matter, I have lots of different sizes, because some of them are harmful, some of them are not. But all particulate matter that's below a certain size gets into your lungs and is harmful. Mm-hmm. Probably ice cream if it was made into small atoms in a spray would be harmful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being facetious here. But so anyways, not in any backyard, and the appropriate word is any, because not in my backyard has become such a phrase for you're a selfish person. You don't want the betterment of the world. You don't want to partake in it. And I think this is the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm. So you got into this, I mean, this is sort of protest art, but you've been doing things like making puppets or, you know, street theater kind of things Didn't you make a big river that we made people carried down the street?
We made a big river. You know, a whole bunch of really busy people got together, and it was World Environment Day, and we wanted to do something. And so we, what could we do that was fast, easy, cheap? Mm-hmm. We ended up doing a big river, a 30-foot-long river, which mm-hmm. was basically a blue, very big piece of blue fabric, very wide, 60-inch wide blue piece of fabric on sticks. And we had 10 people carrying.
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go? Who'd you show it to?
We went all along a route from front all the way around Pioneer Courthouse Square and mm-hmm. did that several loops. We sang a song. We had kids involved. Mm-hmm. It was quite wonderful. And the thing moved like a river, and we had some signage as well.
And what were you?
I was the band leader. I mean, band leader without the band. You know, I was kind of making sure that if there were policemen, we interacted with them in a positive way, that we didn't bother anyone, that we interacted with people.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of art do you do the rest of the time?
Well, actually, the art that I do the rest of the time looks a lot like the show. I've been working. Some of the pieces are older pieces. There's one piece now that I did several years ago, and it's on the cover of a book about crochet art. And it's a globe. I use a lot of globes. So I've done environmental pieces, but I also do a lot of big figures that are about the personal exploration of your life. There's quite a few about getting older and either losing your beauty or trying to hold on to your beauty or looking at your past. But I 1996... I'm sorry, 2006, I did a piece for Maryhill Museum, which was about land use. And all the artists, there were 12 artists, three artists for Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And we each had a farmer that we worked with. And so we worked with sustainability. And that was quite fun. And that got me into the land use, earth, all of those things that were interrelated.
Mm-hmm. That got you into that subject or into making art about that subject?
Yeah. I've always been interested in, you know, I've been an organic gardener since 1975.
Backyard, right? Mm-hmm. It's a separate room. It's very tidy, I should note.
Well, it was tidy because you were coming.
Like you told me, you're not a hoarder, you're a scavenger.
I am, yes. I do give a scrap as a very big beneficiary out of what I don't use anymore, although I have too much crap. I just have too much crap. And as soon as I give it away, then I'll think of some use for it. But I'm noted for making things with found objects, a lot of computer parts, so I have a lot of computer parts, and also for using crocheted wire.
Mm-hmm.
And now I found crocheted using fishing line, which is quite interesting.
So you're out there, and what are you listening to? You listening to music?
I can't listen to music. It's a rhythm. If I'm using my electric drill to screw things in, that has a rhythm. And if it's not the right music, you either can't do it because it's too slow or too fast. And with crocheting, to get the stitches to be even and to, it has to have a rhythm, you have to be in the right rhythm. It
Your
has
hand
a rhythm.
Movements have a
it
rhythm.
Has a rhythm of its own, and I'm very overtaken by music.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to a bit of music that you don't listen to when you're working.
Thank you.
So we're listening to Blue Train by John Coltrane. And Bonnie, why did you pick that song?
Well, I picked this because when I first started working on this project, nobody knew about the Coltranes. Now, Cabu had been very good.
Coltranes.
Coltranes, yeah. Not Coltrane. Nobody had known. And I was out there talking to people. Now, Cabu had done a very good job of getting the word out. The newspapers have been fair on getting, and some newspapers have been abysmal about getting the word out. So I was the one-man band out there talking to people, and people would have this funny expression on their faces when I'd say, well, have you heard about the Coltranes? And they would look at me like, what are you talking about? And they thought I was talking about John Coltrane. And it was like a scene out of Saturday Night Live with Emily Satella, you know, who would go, never mind. I mean, and so I thought, oh, when you asked me to bring music, I said, no, I did not own this music. I'm not in love with this music. I could go more for before 1800. But that's another story. But I just had to bring it because it's such a good story on how words and how people enunciate and how things get mixed up when people speak.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Bonnie Meltzer, and Bonnie's show, Cole, Not in Any Backyard, is on now at the University of Portland Buckley Center Gallery. Bonnie, your titles are always sort of punning, so obviously you're trying to communicate more than just with the visual image. You're trying to give people a way in, I think, by making jokes or easy to sample titles.
Well, art is communication, and so as many ways that you can communicate, especially with issues like this. I mean, I want people to understand. And in another article, I was talking to a reporter, and I said, I want people to be engaged with this. I want people to look at it. I don't want them to say, oh my God, I hate this, and run away screaming. And then you don't communicate the issue. So, and I have to say that I like the verbal almost as much as I like the visual, although I think of myself as a visual person who can write opposed to a verbal person who makes art. And even at the last moment, I changed a title. There was one title which was Desertification, mm-hmm. which was a little too, I don't know.
That was a globe with a kind of mesh of wire over it, and it looked like you'd painted it so the whole globe was a desert, and then it was sitting on a wooden pyre of wood, so yeah. Like you're about to set on fire.
And around the equator were little bits of wood that were crocheted into the equator, symbolizing the rainforest deforestation. And deforestation was another title.
Yeah. So you change it from desertification to what?
I change it to drying up.
Drying up?
Drying up. Because that's what's happened. That's what desertification is. It's drying up. It's drying up.
Right.
And the funny, you know how I got the idea for that piece? Which is amusing to me. The globe itself was beige. And some of the countries were blue. Now, the way we understand symbols is water is always blue. Land is sometimes green, sometimes other colors. But water is always blue. And I was just baffled by this globe.
The ocean was beige?
Beige. Hmm. So I put a transparent overcoat and made the colors more interesting. But that started out as a beige thing. And I thought, well, what are they trying to do is say that everything's turning to desert. And then it gave birth to that. And what I find amusing is I asked somebody, and they still sell this globe. I mm-hmm. bought it for, you know, $2 or something. Or my friend Donnie Lou gave it to me. She gave me is people do that so it matches their decor. And I find that very funny because a globe is a very useful tool. And I want to know where the water is. easily.
So I thought when I was looking around the studio that you had used a hot glue gun, and that ended up in my story and got turned into part of the sub-headline, Eco Crusader with a Hot Glue Gun. And turns out you don't use them. And,
tisk, tisk.
And everyone mocked you for that.
Well, actually, so many of my friends said, were they trying to be dismissive of your art? And mm-hmm. I thought, I don't think so. I think they just...
made a bad assumption, I think.
They just said, you know, glue is a big topic. Actually, my friend Debbie and I, when we get together, we talk glue, and my husband calls us the glue girls. And when you're making things with found objects, you have to use the right glue for the right thing, and because they're found objects, you have no idea what the substrate is. So out for goop. I'm very much in love with goop.
What's that?
It's a thing you buy in the tube at Lowe's or Freddy's. It's $5 or $6. It's sticky and dries clear, although you never see it unless you never see it when I use it because I don't want
it. It's a really strong glue.
It's really strong, and I buy the plum. It's for there's one for plumbers, and there's one for marine applications, and I figure those are the strongest ones, so I buy those. But the glue gun is just not professional enough. It's actually used in the vernacular, and I'm sure there's a lot of artists out there who are giggling, as the hobbyist's glue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a pretty good craftsman.
You're above the hobbyists.
Oh, yeah, God, I've been doing this for centuries.
So would you call yourself a folk artist? Because the style, there is a naivety about the style.
Well, there is the... I don't consider myself... I have way too much training. I have a MFA in design. Sometimes that comes from the found objects, like the little...
kids'
coal
toys,
car.
Right?
I use a lot of kids' toys. Now, the things with computer parts end up, that are not in the show, end up looking quite elegant. And certainly the piece with the beads is very elegant and doesn't have that folk art quality. Mm-hmm. But when you're using a little wooden, actually it's a Noah's Ark and it had the little house on top, I got two pieces out of that. Mm-hmm. So the $5 I spent at the garage sale were well worth it.
So you took the house off and turned the Ark into a little coal truck full of, with wheels and with black stuff in the
right.
back.
Right, and you haven't seen that finished. It has the... gates that come down.
Oh yeah,
like, and it's called crossing. Who Pays, and it's all has money on it, has pennies on it, has all kinds of things on it.
So using kids' stuff, what makes you seem more like a folk artist?
I guess that's, you know, you brought that up, and you know, I'll buy that. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like folk art very much. I look at folk art. I like its direct approach, and I also like that the layers that folk arts have, the layers of meaning. One of the things that makes me very excited is when somebody comes to a show of mine and they say, oh, look at that little detail. Does that mean that? And I said, well, you know, I didn't plan that. And, you know, now that you mention it, sure. Mm-hmm. I like the viewer to... come to it, and I like things to be amorphous enough and have different layers, and sometimes I'll have the same conflict mm-hmm. of images on the same piece because I want the viewer to be involved.
Do you think your art is having any effect on the process of bringing coal through the Northwest?
One of the things that it's doing, we're at this stage in the game now where all the hearings are over, and because three projects were canceled or three were pulled out, people think it's over, and so it's bringing the discussion back.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that.
The price of coal going down is what gets the projects canceled, right?
Well, yes, and investors are pulling out, and many investors, big companies, are saying coal is just not a good investment. And a lot of those companies, they're broke. And they think, here's the thing, they want to get the coal out of the ground before nobody wants it. They're trying to make a quick buck, and they're finding out that coal is volatile and the people are a little volatile too.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Bonnie Meltzer. Her show, Coal Not in Any Backyard, is on now at the University of Portland Buckley Center Gallery through February the 7th, and she'll be doing a talk on Saturday, February the 7th.
No, Friday.
Sorry, Friday, February the 7th at 2 o'clock. Thanks for coming in, Bonnie.
Thank you for having me.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't blow silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on Andy Warhol.
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 in Portland. Están escuchando a KBOO 90.7 in Portland. Stay tuned for Buscando Announcement. So we have an announcement. Este programa es patrocinado en parte por la Fundación de Miembros de KB Oregon y Cover Oregon, un sitio en línea donde usted puede comprar un seguro de salud y aprender sobre la posibilidad de asistencia financiera. Más información, oregon.com u 1-855-268-3767. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cover Oregon, a place online where you can buy health insurance and learn about possible financial assistance. More information available at coveroregon.com 55-2655-268-3767.
We asked KBOO volunteers what they think of commercials.
I hate commercials. That's why I have a DVR at home. I love to just skip right through those bad boys. It's annoying. I mean, it's messages being crammed down your throats for crap you don't need to buy by
so if you like,
I have no interest in.
So if you like not hearing this...
Hi, friends, Ralph Sportsport here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going on a body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around. Here's how. Fruit, and here's how.
You can support our non-commercial programming by becoming a member of our pledged community radio through February 5th, February 6th, through wait to the 8th. We can't wait to thank you. You're listening to Tuesday, January 9th at noon for Tuesday, January 21st on KBOO. The Oklahoma County Republican Party issued a partial apology for 15 recent rally of an AR-15 that was supposedly meant to honor Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King. In their so-called apology, the group compared what it called overreaching government to slavery. West Virginia has lifted a ban. State of West assuming lifted a ban on consuming tap water over a week after a chemical spill contaminated the water supply there. But after lifting the ban, 100 people have become ill from drinking the water. Affected company Freedom Industries spilled the chemical crude M coal washing chemical into the Elk River just upstream of a river just upstream America, the West Virginia on their plants intake on January 9th. Initially, people were told to avoid all contact with the water, but the state decided to lift the ban on drinking water after it determined that the chemicals had been washed downstream. The company has done nothing to clean up the spill, but did attempt to protest last week in an attempt to protect assets. And in international news, a new report released today found that the wealth of the 85 richest people in the world is 60 times the wealth of the 3 billion people at the bottom. This report ladder. This report was released by Oxfam, working to alleviate poverty. They also found that this level of inequality of wealth results in political dysfunction, corruption, and instability. You've been listening to News Headlines at Noon on KBOO. This is Kelly Sunrise. For more local, national, and global news in Oregon studio, tune in at 5 p.m. weekdays. Thank you.